Hey, before we start the show, I want to recommend a new podcast to you because that's what we do here. If you're searching for a podcast about crime relating to actual life events of military personnel, veterans, their family members, or anyone associated with the military in any way, then I've got a show for you. I want to introduce you to The Military True Crime Addict, where they explore a plethora of actual true crime stories that have yet to make the major news headlines. Stories that upon hearing, you'll be astounded by. Military True Crime Addict touches on topics such as assault, harassment, abuse of power, PTSD, our favorite one, murder, hazing, and all kinds of stories that in some way relate to our military veterans and their extended families. The show tries to provide a voice to the victims and hear their side of the story and raise awareness of the heinous crimes to fight for those that have been most impacted. You don't need to know anything about the military to enjoy this podcast, by the way. So for more information on how to listen, visit their website, militarytruecrimeaddict.com. That's militarytruecrimeaddict.com. Or you can join their Facebook group, Military True Crime Addict. We're going to put a link to their show in our show notes. Thank you so much.
Tim, what up, my brother? We are back talking podcasts. Always a pleasure to do with you. So, dude, there are times when we identify a show that we're going to review, and I'm pretty, you know, excited about it. There's other times where we identify something, and I'm like intrigued, but, you know, let's give it a whirl. Then there's shows like we are going to be getting into tonight that is so in the wheelhouse of you and I, the dude and the bro, that I am chomping at the bit to get after it. So tonight we're going to be reviewing My Warped Life, which is by Kevin Lyman, the founder and the man, the myth, the legend behind arguably the most successful touring property in the history of music. I don't know if anyone could really dispute that with the longevity and the acclaim and the numbers and everything it did. So he has put out a podcast where Kevin is going to get into all the war stories, the behind the scenes look at everything that went in to putting on a festival like this. And dude, we did the very first episode that Kevin put out in anticipation of reviewing and doing this show here. And it's all about the very first year of Warped Tour, 1995. I'm just going to stand up real quick.
There you go.
I'm rocking my quicksand shirt in honor of this discussion because, dude, like mid-20s, you and I was at Camden with my brother. We didn't know each other back then, but we were kind of traveling the same path just in parallel universes. And there are a few moments in my life that are truly seminal coming-of-age moments. Lollapalooza, after I had just graduated high school, summer of 92 with Pearl Jam, Soundgarden, that whole crew. Amazing moment. I put this right up there because for me, it was like the just zenith of me getting into hardcore punk. I was always into metal, always into alternative and stuff, but I really started to figure out what hardcore punk was all about. And when you're talking Civ, Sick of It All, Quicksand on the same bill, I mean, just forget about it. So, dude, I know I'm rambling. Let me get you in on this. What are your thoughts on the podcast? And then we can just wax poetically about this era of our lives.
So, yeah, I was a big punk fan myself growing up, living outside of Philadelphia. I would go to shows, the Trocadero, TLA, the Electric Factory, and just having them. I mean, I remember tickets $5, $7. I was a broke high school kid, and just remember having the times of my lives going to these shows, mosh pits, stage diving, the whole nine, man. So when the Warped Tour came out, I had to be there. So definitely went to the one in Philadelphia. So I don't have too much recollection of it, you know, because there was some partying going on back in those days. But I can elaborate on kind of the visceral reaction I had to the podcast if we want to take the conversation.
Do it, man. We can go anywhere we want to go, man. This is our youth we are reliving, so let's enjoy the moment. And by the way, technically, not to fact check you, Camden, technically, but we all refer to it as the Philly show.
Yeah, I mean, come on. It's Camden's like a suburb. Let's be real here. Yeah, I mean, you know, I listened to both episodes, you know, totally engaged, you know, bringing back memories. And, you know, I'm just listening to stories of how, you know, people just wanted to be a part of this thing. And, you know, he didn't have a lot of resources. He was trying to build this thing and everything was kind of like catch can. And, you know, what's the word? I'm improvising stuff on the fly with food and everything. And I'm thinking to myself, man, I wish I was such a dumb 20-year-old kid, because I had friends that like really loved the music, loved the scene. And, you know, their whole attitude was like, how can I do this and make money and do what I love as a living? And that I every story that I hear, I see that in them. Like, how can I be a part of the Warped Tour and do it as my job? Let me pick up a box and move it. Let me be a roadie. Let me help with food, because I love this so much. How can I be part of it? Me, I'm just so dumb. I just want to be there and here, take my money. I didn't have no concept of like how I could make a living out of being a fan of music. And that's the reaction that I had, man.
That's a very interesting reaction. It's funny because my brother spent a great long time working in the music industry. I was grateful for the opportunity to ride his coattails for a little bit. And I spent a few years in the music industry, first at a label for a little bit and then at merchandising companies. But I did that like much later in my career. And when I talked to my brother's friends, I'm especially thinking of one in particular, our buddy Tim, who's a booking agent of bands that, you know, everyone would know. For him, there was no other path. I've heard him talk about this on podcasts and he's talked to me about this. Like, it was like, burn the boats behind me. I am inserting myself into the music industry and I'm going to make a go of it because that's the culture and the lifestyle I want to dwell in. I'm not going to be a 9-to-5 guy. And I'm so envious of being able to have that kind of awareness and to not only be aware of it, but to take that kind of definitive action. I, in my career, had always been kind of scared of that stuff. I wanted the security of kind of the corporate life, the salary, the benefits. And I had always been obsessed with music and watched my brother do the same thing that I just talked about with Tim. There was no other. Paul, my brother, started out in the corporate world, but then went full tilt, ran up credit card debt, like almost just had a financial catastrophe in his hands. But then he kind of eventually made it and really ended up, you know, managing some really cool bands that people will know. He actually knows Kevin very well. So it's, and I'm not trying to be a douche by mentioning that, but he speaks so highly of just how great of a dude that Kevin is, and that all the bands that have been on Warped Tour, they all glow about the experience that they had with Kevin. And I think like Kevin, like Tim, like Paul, like those guys had no other options. It was do that or just flame out trying. And I never really rolled like that in my life, and I'm envious of that.
Yeah, that's exactly. I'm envious of that too. And I had a buddy that kind of got in the music late industry. He started a record label. It was more towards like hip hop music and things of that nature. But, you know, he made a go of it. He made relationships. And, you know, he was trying to make money doing what he loved. And I'm, you know, looking back and listening to this podcast, I wish I just had that mentality. And that's the one thing that, you know, this podcast kind of extracted from my core as I'm listening to it. Like, why couldn't I just, you know, pick up a crate of onions at the Warped Tour and start chopping them and getting a backstage pass, man?
That's awesome. Dude, let's go back to that incredible, fateful day back in Canada. By the way, I still have held on to my physical ticket stub too. And kids out there are probably like, what the heck is a ticket stub? But yes, back in the day, we had the printed little cardboard type, almost like ticket printed out for us. And it's funny, Tim, because when you hear Kevin Lyman in his podcast talk about that first year on Warped Tour, he didn't know that he was even going to survive it. It was so dire out there. They were having promoters actually canceling the show on them when they arrived at the grounds ready to put the show on. Just like all sorts of chaos. And he talks about how underwhelming the ticket numbers were. And I do recall, recollecting back now compared to other festivals I've been, in Camden, it was not a highly attended event. It was even set up funny. It was in the middle of the concrete concourse area where you would go to buy snacks for a typical much larger event there. They had the one stage there, which is where Civ and Sick of It All was. And then the other stage was out almost by the entrance. It's like they built a stage in just a grass area. That's the one that like L7 and Quicksand ended the night on. But dude, to hear the juxtaposition of Kevin just almost like going to lose the entirety of his financial well-being versus me, who's in absolute heaven having the time of my life. It's just two totally different experiences. And clearly the Warped Tour went on to become just a phenom. So Kevin made out just fine. But hearing kind of the pains and the struggles those guys went through to get that first year off the ground, it was wild.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't surprise me either because, you know, you hear stories, you know, Woodstock is legendary. And when you get like a bunch of like bands that are just artists that are kind of like not structural, you know, hey, I'm punctual and that sort of thing, they're the kind of antithesis of that. And then you got guys that are running this that are probably just like you know, uber fans that, you know, are running this stuff. You know, you can see it's kind of a recipe for disaster, but it seemed like as time went on, they just were able to adapt and just make it work by necessity, which was just an amazing accomplishment in itself.
And I think it's a credit to the spirit of punk rock dudes, hardcore dudes. It's a very unity-driven ethos within that community. And I'm sure those guys felt the responsibility of getting the platform of a multi-band touring opportunity like that. And they want to do right by Kevin and right by the hardcore community and do a good job. And maybe that's in a little bit of contradiction to another band that was on that tour, which would be Sublime. And it's funny, man. I went on to become a fan of Sublime, so I'm not going to be like I'm too cool for school. But at that very moment in 95, they were not on my radar yet. I was all about Civ, who I think played at the same exact time that Sublime did, and I opted for Civ, and I would opt for Civ again right now as well. Even I went on to love Sublime. Civ's a special performer, but it's interesting that those guys were like the sore thumb on that tour. I think you might even have a clip queued up. Do we want to listen to that? And we'll talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, let's listen. And I was the same way. Well, I think Sublime at the time, weren't they more of like a California base? So, you know, us being East Coast, maybe they weren't on our radar.
Yeah, they had not blown up anywhere near the realms that they had gotten to. Yeah. So I think they were potentially more of a coastal thing at that time. But soon after, my God, we know the realms they soared to.
Right. And yeah, and I'm totally with you. I became a fan of Sublime, obviously, afterwards. But I mean, you have Civ. You know, the Gorilla Biscuits.
Civ all day long, man. Legendary. Set your goals, thing. Bro. Like, let's do this.
It's crazy. All right, let's listen to them talk about Sublime. Yeah.
But then I brought this band called Sublime on the tour with us. And on Sublime, I remember getting Sublime's cassette demo originally. And I started working with them around Los Angeles. And we had done some shows at ski resorts at one point, right, with The Offspring, No Doubt, and Sublime. But, you know, you started to, they were always like this kind of train wreck. And I'm sure we could do a whole episode on Sublime stories, just like we
were. Yeah, they could do a whole episode on Sublime stories.
By the way, real quick, though, can I ask you something?
Yeah. Yes.
Kevin Lyman has a very distinct pronunciation. Am I saying that right? He's like Sublime.
Sublime.
Yeah, and he knows the band and like had booked them. So I'm not going to question the way he says that the band name, but it's Sublime, right? Or do I say it funny? Like he's very enunciating. I'm making up words, but I think you get my point with the sub and then lime. Did you pick up
Sublime,
on that at all?
Sublime. Yeah. I don't know if that's a dialectical thing. Coastal.
By the way, dude, Northeast. I would defer to Mr. Lyman on this one. I'm not trying to correct the guy at all, but I just found that interesting.
And maybe that's how the band intended it too. Sublime.
Yeah. And dude, by the way,
exactly.
They sound like a raving pack of lunatics. Clearly, Brad had just significant drug issues, and they brought friends on that didn't really sound like fun friends, but more like hanger-oners and the dog. It just sound. And I had always heard in sort of folklore of the Warped Tour that those guys were a train wreck on that tour, and it, we pretty much heard as such.
He begged them not to bring the dog, and the dog was like biting people, like, you know, and, you know, you're thinking as like the owner of the tour, like that's a liability issue. It's crazy, but you know, it wouldn't be rock and roll without some rock and roll stories. So.
No, that's for sure, man. So dude, I want to take a moment to show my shirt again out of appreciation for my man, Walter, not literally my man, but to know Quicksand is to be obsessed with Quicksand. Either you know them and you're fully obsessed with them, or maybe they just never been on your radar. But I haven't met anyone who's like, oh, Quicksand, like, they're pretty cool. I like a song or two. No, it's like, Quicksand, yes, it's an obsession. Slip to me is, forget genre, man. It's just one of the absolute all-time greatest albums ever. The flow, start to finish, the urgency of the songs. And by the way, I love Manic Compression too. It's like 1A, 1B. But to me, like the first time I heard Slip, I think I was a sophomore in college, I want to say. I remember it was around my birthday, and my brother got me 3 CDs for my birthday. And this was way before he was in the music industry. And we were just, you know, kids being into music. And it was Clutch's first album, Transnational, blah, 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 whatever that title is. It was Quicksand Slip. And I want to say it was a Bad Religion album too. I forget. But like when I put on Slip, like, dude, it was so immediate, my reaction to it. I was like, my God, like I'd never heard anything like that before. And I wasn't hip enough to have the history of like Gorilla Biscuits and Youth of Today and all that stuff as context. To me, this was like a brand new band, and Walter being like a new figure in my life for appreciating music in the early to mid 90s. You know, from him and other bands, crossover bands like Life of Agony and stuff, I went on to learn more about, you know, the roots of hardcore punk and everything. That's a long-winded way of saying that there's never been anything like Quicksand before, never been anything like them since. No one, like, it's just such a unique groove and crunch to the guitar sound, and I just never tired of revisiting those two albums. And I know there's some later stuff by Quicksand, but like for me, like those two seminal albums are just like, dude, my God. And I know you share a similar love of Quicksand as well.
So I was a huge fan of Gorilla Biscuits. So it took a while, like, because Quicksand, like, I guess the sound kind of evolved. You know, he went from a teenager doing, you know, punk shows,
yeah,
in front of like 50 people, and made that album Slip. And the sound, I mean, it took a little bit, you know, especially with Civ too. You know, you're like, all right, you're wanting Gorilla Biscuits, but you're getting something new. So there was that adjustment period. But, dude, agreed, over time, just that sound that evolved on that album was just unbelievable.
Yeah, and live, anytime live, those guys absolutely brought the energy, just absolutely crushed it. Dude, by the way, this is a little off topic, but related. One of my all-time favorite show memories, I got to see Quicksand and Tribe Called Quest together at Syracuse University for one of their Spring Fling block party events. I had a buddy who was going to school there, so we made the road trip up from the Philly area to get. And I mean, talk about your youth encapsulated in a moment. Tribe and Quicksand performing at a big college. It was, and they were awesome. I've seen Quicksand like a dozen times. Even recent history, just absolutely brilliant every time. And them at Warped Tour that year is just etched in my memory without a doubt.
Is that still a thing? Like, you know, college, I remember college radio, you know, that's where, like, you know, you would hear like artists for the first time. And back then I was just like, was just so thirsty for the new artists and the new sound and what's the coolest thing. And you couldn't get a show like that anywhere else but a college campus, because they weren't, you know, beholden to market share and, you know, the audience and the target audience. It was just like, you love Tribe Called Quest, you love Quicksand, why not? Let's have a show.
Absolutely. You know what I mean? Yeah, I don't know if that stuff takes place anymore on campuses. You know, it was such a unique thing, and I had always heard of like schools doing cool stuff like that. My school wasn't that big enough to have a cool outing like that. So I don't know, man. But dude, back to the show. I'm going to be curious, just as curious to hear about Kevin talk about when Warped Tour popped and became this 7+ stage extravaganza with 50,000 plus kids attending. Because I imagine, I'm not certain, there's an equal but different set of stress with that, just as there is with the festival that's underwhelming in ticket sales and no one's showing up. I'd imagine there's just this entire other set of headaches and stressors that come with managing a mini city. I'm fascinated to hear what those stories and what those kind of stressors sound like from Kevin.
There's no question. There's got to, you know, you're managing more people. There's more problems. I'm going to be tuning in to, you know, to figure out what transpires, man.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I don't think there's a ton in the music space that I regularly check out podcast-wise. Interestingly enough, the bulk of it comes kind of from like the hardcore community. There's a guy, Joe Hardcore in Philly. He has the This Is Hardcore podcast. Joe himself has been booking a significant Philadelphia Hardcore Festival that's really like kind of a worldwide recognized platform. So he has his own podcast now, which is great. And then Toby from H2O. H2O is another semi-recurring appear on the Warped Tour. Toby, the frontman from H2O, has his own show as well. And I think both those guys are doing incredible work. So it's fun to have Kevin jumping in and doing this with My Warped Life, because I can't get enough of kind of like the inside baseball discussion on music. It's funny, for certain shows, when it gets too granular and inside baseball with like comics, it may lose me a little bit. It can't be inside baseball enough with the Warped Tour and talking about these bands, because I just lived and breathed this era in these bands. And there's so many. I'm just going to call out a few other highlights in my Warped Tour history there. I want to say this was 99. It was Scarhead, H2O, and Agnostic Front was one of the bigger billed bands, because AF had kind of been broken up for a while in the middle of the 90s, and this was them kind of reestablishing themselves. They put out that great album on Epitaph, and dude, I got to be kind of hanging off to the side of the stage with my brother when Agnostic Front played, and it was just like such a powerful thing to see those dudes in front of a packed, you know, floor of kids outside, the sun shining. That was a really special moment. VOD and Snapcase, two other favorites of mine, were on the same year. I think that was 2000. And then another older one, Deftones with Hatebreed, were on the same year. That was like 98. Then I dropped off for a while. Like, that was kind of the tail end of my younger 20s and attending. I dropped off for a while. And then I returned back when I got to thankfully work in the music industry for a little bit. So I got to go see bands like Every Time I Die, who were like Warped Tour, Perennials, The Story So Far, who are kind of like a younger pop punk band that kids absolutely love. And ended up having like kind of a second act with the Warped Tour as an older dude, and enjoying it just as much as I did as a kid, like just loving the energy, seeing all the bands, the hangs with, you know, with the buds and everything. It just being immersed in that culture, man. It's just an awesome thing. And I don't know what else can ever be like that again with this not being out there now.
No, there's no question. And what's intriguing about the podcast itself is, you know, they recant, you know, they have fans, they have former band members, former staffers that recant about it. And you know, like, oh, like how in 1995, like, you know, how simplistic and, you know, what's the word I'm looking for, but just, you know, simple things were. And we didn't have a lot of amenities and everything was dumbed down. And the band members, like, we didn't even know it. We didn't care. Like, we're punk bands. We're used to playing in like a church basement or something. And, you know, now we're on this tour. Like, it was, you know, we had a tour bus that was like wild beyond our dreams. So just everyone was just so appreciative just to even have this festival. And, you know, the podcast kind of brings out those sentiments when you hear those stories, which was cool. I'm going to play another clip here, Mike, and this will kind of give you it sets the scene of what the Warped Tour experience was, especially in those early days.
This was the first punk show that we'd been to that had more than one stage, right? Like, I'd been to Lollapalooza before, and I'd been to like festival shows at the fairgrounds, but this was the first, like, with a skateboard ramp and people that were more along my newfound love of punk and hardcore.
So, yeah, I mean, you know, you got just these, you know, punk bands, up and coming bands that, you know, just to be a part of this was just an experience in itself. So that's really cool to listen to.
Yeah, and like I said, I had done Lollapalooza a few years earlier, summer of 92, and two completely kind of distinct and separate musical festivals and platforms and whatnot. But for me, each looms so large in my heart, and I have just such a soft spot in my heart for thinking back on the Warped Tour, because again, it was really me starting to figure out this entire world of hardcore punk and starting to slowly learn about the roots from sort of like the newer generation of bands that then taught me to go back and learn about kind of the more old school stuff and start connecting the dots. Like, oh, wait, Walter was in a band, Gorilla Biscuits, and oh, wait, that's Sib's band, like all that stuff. And it just, it was such a fun time period of discovery for me. I remember getting this distribution CD magazine. I want to say it was Very Distribution in Philly. It would get mailed to me, I think maybe once a month, and I would call, I swear I have this right, I would call the number on there and a dude would answer and I'd give him my credit card and I would order old school New York hardcore stuff that I was learning about and I would have CDs shipped to my house. I think it was Very Distribution. I think I have that right. But just that entire run from, you know, 94 to, you know, 2000, let's say, was just such an intense era of discovery for me. Bands like Vision of Disorder, I wanted to get more extreme. The more extreme I heard, like, I just was fascinated and captivated by it. It was just such an awesome period of life. And Warped Tour was just a summer ritual that was right there alongside of it, giving us this platform to get together and celebrate live music with these incredible bands. And forever grateful for those experiences. I think it's so cool for Kevin, from a founder and creator's perspective, to put out his thoughts and document that on record for all of us. And it's neat to hear his stories, but it's equally as fun to allow us to kind of relive the magic right alongside with him. So I hope he keeps sticking with it and just getting as deep and granular and all the awesome war stories he has in his arsenal to share. What's your parting thoughts, man, on My Warped Life?
Yeah, and I want to echo those entire sentiments, man. I couldn't have said it any better. But just even listening in the second episode, they talk about, like, the whole episode is about, like, food and just, like, how, like, they didn't even think about, like, hey, we got to feed hundreds and hundreds of people, bands, staffers. And, you know, they brought a woman on who ended up, like, being, you know, like a caterer to, like, rock and roll bands. And, you know, she's made a career out of it. But I wanted to ask you, I remember buying 7-inch records. Was that something that, like, that was like, if you were into, like, you know, underground hardcore music, you would buy those vinyl 7-inch pressers?
Without a doubt. Right? I never got into that, but that was absolutely a core staple of the hardcore scene, was the 7-inch. Yeah, there's no doubt about it. That was a big, significant component of like the physical product aspect of what bands put out. No doubt about it. Yeah. You don't still have any of those on hand, do you?
Oh man, I used to have a lot of that stuff, and along with my memories, they're just in the ethos.
Oh, I feel you, man.
But yeah, I'm gonna go back. This has now inspired me to go back and listen to. I actually, before the show, Mike, I listened to Orange 9mm.
Nice, yeah.
But I'm going to go back. Now you got me like wanting to go back and listen to Slip. So I'm going to go and do that once we get off this.
And by the way, I'm pretty sure, because I've seen it, I don't know if it's still there, but there was almost like a professionally shot footage of Quicksand's entire set in Camden that day at the Warped Tour, the 95 Warped Tour. That was on YouTube at one point. I remember watching the entire thing and just wanting to shed tears of emotion because it was just so great to watch that. Those guys, man, I know I keep going on here, but like just again, the urgency and the energy, like those are the two words in their in the crafting of the song and the delivering of it. And by the way, Serge, the bass player for Quicksand, for anyone might not be aware, he has been in the Deftones for a while now. Ever since that fateful accident with Chi, unfortunately, the bass player of the Deftones, Serge has been a full-time member of the Deftones ever since. Which is cool because a lot of people might know that Deftones and Quicksand toured back in the day. So they're kind of like bro bands. So to have that kind of synergy between those two camps with Serge being over there is awesome. I'm going to be seeing the Deftones this August. Might be my first show back after, you know, the COVID freeze out.
Really?
Yeah. So Deftones, again, another Warped Tour veteran band. Go right ahead. You had a thought?
Yeah, we were at the same. I didn't get a chance to even see you, but we were at the Quicksand show. What was that, 4 years ago?
Yeah, Union
or
Transfer,
so,
right? Union Transfer. Yeah. That was awesome.
I just remembered like just singing the whole set. Just you knew every song,
every word,
just, like every lyric,
every single word.
It's even 20 years later.
I know it's all good stuff. God, I miss shows, man. I just, you know. I think everyone's been doing great. I've been doing great trying to keep a good headspace and everything. There is no replacement for going and seeing a live concert. Like if you're a yoga fan, you've been doing yoga at home. It's not the same as being at the studio, but you've at least been able to do yoga. I can't replicate in any capacity what it's like to attend a show and to see artists completely locked in their craft. Them up there having the time of their lives, giving that energy to us singing back and giving the energy back to them. I walk out of concerts and I'm not trying to sound dramatic, man, but like my soul gets cleansed, dude. It's something I carry with me for days on end after a show. I have moments of the show that like just reverberate in my head for a few days. I sing the songs. I get inspired to listen to the catalog of the band for like I need that back in my life so desperately, and I feel very hopeful that this summer it's going to happen. Like I said, I have a show on the calendar. It hasn't been moved and postponed. So as of now, I think I'm going to see it, man. So, dude, you and I got to get out, find a good show to get to, man. Maybe this fall we can get to one, bud.
Yeah, because I know we're like kind of belaboring it and we're kind of getting off topic here, but I used to love music, man. Like just like you, like I wanted to find the latest, greatest, newest band. I wanted to listen to the stuff that no one listened to. I wanted to be the coolest, hippest, hipster type dude out there. And just, I don't know, man. I don't know if it's just like, is this make me old, like an old dude and an old bro? Like just the music today just doesn't inspire me. Like the old,
it's possible.
Is that just like an old man?
Very
talking?
Well possible, which is okay. Cause it's funny. Like I've kind of, not that I've given up on trying to discover new bands, but I've actually done this thing where I've opened my heart up to my entire past catalog, meaning there's significant chunks of time in my youth where I felt like music was the zero-sum game. So if like I was into hardcore punk, I had to be into hardcore punk to the exclusivity of anything else. I didn't even allow, like when I started getting in, like around like 94, 95, I kind of pushed Pearl Jam off to the side and kind of stopped carrying along the ride with them and then went headfirst in my mind, like a zero sum mentality into hardcore. And then, like, I had a stage where I was really getting into, like, EDM and going to, you know, after-hours clubs to hear, like, hard trance DJs from, like, Germany and all. And that became a zero. Now it's just, like, it's just about everything and wanting to experience it all. It's not so much that I'm staying on top of discovering new artists, but I'm just trying to enjoy, like, I went to Fleetwood Mac concert. Like, anything and everything that I have a cursory awareness of, I want to soak it in and bask in it. So I've stopped trying to be too cool for school and just hyper-focusing on a genre or anything. It's all out there. Pop, whatever. Bring it all on, man. I love it. And I think that first concert we're back into, man, when this is all said and done, dude, I may cry, man. And I'm not trying to be funny in that. I think it's going to be so overwhelming to finally see a show again. And it's going to be such a release that, like, I'm going to have no other choice but to just to, like, stream tears down my cheeks, man. It's going to be beautiful.
Well, hey, man, if there's any other shows coming up, why don't you hit the bro up and text me an invite?
You got it, man. You got it. We'll record some content on site, man. Some special B-roll of you and I getting stoked at a show. I'm in on that.
Hey, I see everyone, like, how this podcast, one podcast that just came out, has brought out all these feelings and emotions.
Beautiful, and man. We got to own our emotions as middle-aged men. It's all good. Well, dude.
Yeah. Check out My Warped Life, everyone.
Yeah, exactly. My Warped Life. Reclaim your emotions. But yeah, it's a great experience. You have a blast with it. Props to Kevin Lyman. Good luck with the outing. I hope anyone and everyone that's ever attended a Warped Tour gravitates to this podcast and supports it, because he's really doing a neat thing here. So, Tim, that's all I got. Until the next one.
All right. Yep, there's always going to be a next one.
Later, bro.
Later.
This episode of A Dude and a Bro podcast is brought to you by the fine folks at Podcorn. As you guys know, we love listening to and talking about podcasts. As podcasters ourselves, we understand the time and energy that goes into getting the right equipment, finding the time to record, and just the daily grind of promoting the show. There are hard costs to building a show, and monetizing your work is a critical component of growth. Enter Podcorn, who is disrupting the traditional and, frankly, outdated path to sponsorships. Podcorn is a user-friendly marketplace connecting podcasters to amazing sponsorship opportunities such as host read ads, interview segments, topical discussions, and more. At podcorn.com, you can get started with a user-friendly interface where you can easily browse potential sponsors. Podcorn gives you the flexibility to collaborate with these sponsors and choose the right opportunity that fits the size and scope of your show, and you never give up any rights to your podcast. Click on the link in our show notes to sign up to Podcorn and start browsing sponsorship opportunities right now. We want to give a big shout out to Podcorn. Thanks to Podcorn, A Dude and a Bro can continue to focus our energy and efforts on creating content for you and talking about the podcasts we love. Go to www.podcorn.com today to get started. That's www.podcorn.com. Later.
We are A Dude and a Bro podcast show. We are entrenched in podcasts. We want to do for the world of podcasting what Siskel and Ebert did for movies back in the day. So we love doing reviews of our favorite podcasts. We love suggesting new shows to all the fine folks out there in the world. And then Tim and I love debating topics from the latest and greatest episodes of our favorite podcast shows. Hey guys, you would do us a huge favor if you could head over to podchaser.com. Podchaser is your one-stop shop for all things related to podcasts and your favorite podcast shows. Search A Dude and a Bro podcast show and then leave us a review. If you could take a moment to drop a few lines about what it is you enjoy about A Dude and a Bro podcast show over on the Podchaser site, we'd be eternally grateful for your support. Thanks so much, guys.